Voices Radio Network.
Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally, and we are on episode 9 or 8. I think it's 8. That's what it is, Dave. We're on episode 8. Can you believe it? We're almost into double digits. How you doing, man?
I'm good. Are you sure? I've got a clue. I don't even know what day is, let alone where we are in episodes.
You've been busy. We started talking off air, and I stopped you. I was like, hey, hold on, man, because this is stuff that I think would be really entertaining and interesting to hear. You were in court yesterday. You were tied up all day in court. You are an expert witness in steroid cases, correct?
Yes.
What is that?
Bloody hell. Right. Because of the uniqueness of the situation with the legalities around steroid possession in the UK, because it's legal to possess. So it's not illegal to have steroids. It's not illegal to use steroids. It is, however, illegal to supply them. And by supply, that means selling, giving, passing on, whatever you do.
You can't even give some D-ball away to your buddy in the gym, you're saying?
Nope, that's still technically classified. I mean, obviously, it's unlikely you're going to get prosecuted for that, but that is still technically supply. And I have done a case of a police officer, a female police officer, who got sacked, and I was dealt with the Tribunal for Employment for giving somebody 10 Anavar tablets.
Oh, man.
She just left him in a tub at the back door, and it was text message evidence about the fact that she'd left him in his tub at the back door, and that lost her a job.
Oh, jeez. Anyway. Wow.
Anyway. So, obviously, because people know that possession is legal, when someone gets caught with a large amount and is charged with intent to supply, the first thing they say is, no, they're mine.
Oh, yeah. That kilo of test was for me.
Yeah, it's my cycle. I bought in bulk. I do this. I do whatever.
Sure.
Now, I generally do defense, but I do actually work for the police, training police officers to be expert witnesses in court. I work with Kent Police that run a course 3 to 4 times a year. We have about 16 people on it, and it's an all-round drug course, so they look at. And most of these guys are drugs officers. So their main forte or experience is in class A's and cocaine, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But slowly but surely, they're going more across steroids. But there's really only one guy left in the police force that actually specializes in steroid prosecutions, and that's a guy called Mike Kent.
Hmm. Let me ask you, is Mike Kent pretty jacked or no?
No, he's actually not a bad guy, to be fair. He's generally fairly decent when he looks at cases, where some of the ones in the past have been absolutely ridiculous about their interpretation of what is present there.
Okay. And I bet you too that they try to push it like you have a $500 cycle and they say, oh, this is thousands of dollars of street value product.
some have, and like I say, Mike's generally pretty good, to be fair.
Gotcha.
Basically, what happens is when the police gather evidence, it gets sent to the Crown Prosecution Service in the UK. They decide whether there's a case to move forward. Part of the process of gathering evidence is to get an expert report, because obviously people looking at this case know nothing about steroids.
Yeah.
So what they will do is they'll look at the evidence and they'll comment on what supports the charge. And quite often, usually, they'll also do a valuation on what's seized.
Okay.
Now, obviously, as someone who is defending their position, they have the right to the same service.
Okay, yeah.
So this is where I step in. So I'm recognized by the court, and I write a report to basically counter the police report.
Interesting.
Now, we have very strict guidelines, and we must be neutral. We can't be biased, and we can't show favor towards who's paying our bills.
Okay.
Now, that in its own right is a bit of a daft sell, because if you're working as an expert witness for defense, then obviously you're trying to support the defense's argument, but you can't be openly seen to do that. And this is where it gets the fun bits come in.
Okay.
if you're a copper and being a copper for 20 years and you're doing a report for the prosecution for the police, then obviously your boss wants a result.
Yeah.
So you're in the same position on the opposite side of the fence. There's a great deal of pressure to create an environment that's going to, you know, seal a conviction.
Yeah, they want to nail this guy.
But you've got to appear on that paper when you write those reports and when you stand and give evidence in court, you've got to appear to be neutral.
Yeah.
So you've got to be able to support your arguments. And it is really a game. I can't speak to, well, I can now because the case is done, finished and sentenced. But out of respect for the person charged, I'm not going to speak too much about the actual details of the case. But safe to say, he wasn't in the strongest position when it came to his defense.
Okay.
So my whole job in that situation was to just create enough ruffling of feathers and to create enough of an argument, the prosecution, we're going to go, we're going to have a fight.
Mm.
They've got something there. And there were a few little elements about the case that gave me some footholds.
Okay, cool.
One was, it was a supply and manufacture case.
Okay.
Defense was homebrew because it was very low volume production.
Okay.
And what was lucky for us in that there was evidence of this brand being sold elsewhere.
Mm.
So we just created a big enough argument and I go off what evidence I'm given and what the defendant says. The defendant tells me it's this, this, and this. And I look at the evidence and go, yeah, that's possible.
Mm, yeah.
The evidence does support that argument. So I don't get involved in whether he's guilty or not. It's not my job to say. All I can tell you is that the evidence that he presented to me did support his argument, but there were a few things that were questionable.
Okay.
But we created enough of a thorn in the police's side that he then went to court and counterplead to a lesser charge, and they accepted it because they didn't want to fight.
Okay, nice. I guess. So, I mean, he still got convicted, yeah, it sounds like.
He got convicted, but it was a very low charge, and basically he just got some community service.
Oh, nice.
So we're talking very, very low numbers, and numbers that would actually support me. I had more in my stash when I was using.
Yeah. Let me ask you this then, Dave. How much would it take to actually be considered more than personal use? Because I'll be flat out honest. There was a couple cycles in the past that had you seen it, you would have thought I was a supplier where I got everything ahead of time for a contest prep. And I really believed in the drugs at the time. And I thought like, oh, I want to switch from this ester to that ester. And I'm going to do this and that. And I'm going to add this oral in at this time. And it amounted to, you know, a little shoebox full of gear.
You know, it's not, there is no preset, and it's not even volume quite often. It's variety.
Oh, so if there was less variety?
If I looked at a style and a guy had 20 vials of Testy, 10 vials of Trenny,
yeah,
10 vials of Masty, 10 growth pens,
yeah,
or even double those amounts, you could argue that it's a big cycle or it's a long-term situation, but that could strongly be argued as cycle.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
If you turn up with a guy with Tren End, Test Sip, Sustanon, then you're going to start saying, well, why has he got 5 hours of Test E? Why has he got 5 hours of Test Sip? Why has he got 5 hours of Test Sus?
Yeah, and then he's got your DECA and EQ on top
of
that.
It's more the variety. So he may have a volume of total drugs, but he's got a variety.
I see.
And it's not always volume that's the issue.
Hmm.
And the thing is with this, it is very much theatrics. I mean, if you read the reports between myself and the police expert in this case, who had actually retired, come out of retirement to finish the case off, a guy called Steve Holmes, and he's a cracking lad. He's a Northern Soul DJ. Now, if you read our reports, you'd think we hated each other.
Really?
Oh, God, we sling muddler. And I got to court, and Steve's message, where are you? I'm upstairs. Oh, I'll be up in a minute. How you doing? And for a coffee. Best of mates. step in court and hellfire breaks loose.
Yeah.
Finish. Best of mates again. And that's where a lot of experts struggle is they take what's on the stand very personally. And it's not. It's just a game. I've sat in chambers with barristers at Leeds Crown Court of both the defence and the opposition and the prosecution, sat having a cup of tea and a biscuit and a chat, talking about holidays and all sorts of crap. I'm just talking about career in general.
Yeah.
And then I've stepped on the stand half an hour later and the barrister that's just been chatting to me about his holiday and his kids and everything stood on that stand and ripped me up for arse paper about how I'm unfit to take a stand because I've got a criminal record and how I must be biased because I'm an ex-steroid user and my word can't be trusted in court.
Hmm.
And then we walk out and it's like, oh, me, you roasted me there. I said, yeah, I thought I had you on that, but you got out of it. you know, and it is very much theatrics. And I mean, I've been sent to court to just stand there and make them think that I'm going to take the stand and cause problems.
Yeah.
So they focus on trying to defend against my argument when, in fact, I'm never going to take the stand. It's real chess game. And it's when you get into it, it's good. It's fun. And I know that sounds a bit flippant, but
I could see that. Yeah.
It's very intellectually challenging.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you've got to walk into there. And be able to cope on the spot with everything from a personal attack about your integrity. And though the judge is there and does rule to some degree, if he feels barristers have got a valid line of argument, he'll let them go some way sometimes.
Yeah.
And I've seen guys lose it in the stand because they can't cope with the questioning.
Oh, geez.
And so you've just got to be able to hold your own up there, but it's I love that challenge of it and that battle of wits, and it can be such a cloak and dagger thing because Bloody's case I've just done, Steve put a report in, I put a report in against his report and made comment about some things in his report, he then put a report back in countering my first report.
Mm.
And we were going to answer that, and we decided not to. We'd do it on the day. So he had followed a line of argument with certain things in his report that he thought, you know what, well, prosecution definitely thought, oh, we've got him on a bit of a back foot here.
Yeah.
Yet if we'd have taken the stand, they would have been hit with a shitload of evidence that was undeniable. Reports from leading researchers supporting my argument, reports from the ACMD supporting my argument, and various other things about what the change in the law did in 2012 and how it affected the domestic market for UGLs and homebrew and stuff like this and all sorts of technicalities in the case that they weren't expecting and they wouldn't have been ready for.
Hmm.
So it is really a game to a degree. And there's a lot of pressure on prosecution to get a result cost effectively and swiftly. So when they were offered a guilty plea with no trial on a lot lesser charge, the police weren't happy, but Crown Prosecution looked at it, well, we've got to win, as far as they're concerned, because they've got a guilty plea. It's not cost us tens of thousands of pounds in court time, and we can move on to another case that we've already got a backlog on and we're already behind with, and then we can catch up with something else.
We don't have to deal with Dave Crossland.
Well, that was an issue at all, to be honest.
No, I mean, like, they don't have to go head-to-head with you. We'll deal with something a little easier. We'll just get this one done.
Yeah, it could have ended up being a two-day trial.
Right, right.
And that ties a jury up for 2 days as well.
Yeah.
And ties a court and a judge and barristers and everybody else, and all the time the bills are going up.
Mm.
The police weren't happy because they wanted a stronger conviction.
Yeah.
But they didn't get what they wanted. So quite often the legalities of these cases, it becomes more of a bartering situation.
Hmm.
Where I'll give you this if you give me this. So it's like, I'll go guilty. It's called Goodyear. I'll go guilty if you give me indication of sentence.
Hmm.
And though the judge fixed sentence, the police have an influence on what they can request as sentence.
Oh, interesting.
So an offence had a guideline. It has a sentencing guideline, and it can be quite a range of options sometimes. And the police can put pressure for it to go one way or the other. So obviously, if the police come in with a lower suggestion on sentencing, it's more likely to push the judge that way as well.
Okay.
But yeah, it's it's quite complex with the rules in which you have to work around, and it's like I say, it's a real battle of words and wits, and quite often a judge will order that two expert witnesses, because he doesn't want the court stands tied up with two guys arguing about steroids, because he knows fuck all about them.
Yeah, right. He can't jump in.
So he will sometimes tell us to hot tub, which basically means we have to come to an agreement either outside of the court time in our own time, or sometimes we'll do it in judges and chambers.
Okay.
In this case, he asked us to try and come. No, we don't have to, but he asked us to try and come to an arrangement prior to court, or at least boil it down to 4 or 5 points we were contesting.
Okay.
Which saves time in court, because you don't go through all the reports. You just pick up the 4 or 5 points that are contested.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, and it sort of limits barristers a bit from going off on silly little jaunts and talking bollocks just to try and... Because you've got to remember, when you're in front of a jury, you're in front of 12 regular people. And how you come across as an individual and how that barrister makes you look with what he says to you can be very influential on whether those individuals believe you.
Yeah.
So if I take the stand on a trial basis with a jury of 12, and that barrister starts ripping into me about the fact that I've been to prison and the fact that I've done this and I've done that and I've done the other, though it's not relevant, and the chances are if I turn to the brush and say, Your Honor, I don't think this is relevant, the judge will tell him to shut his mouth and behave himself.
Mm.
The information is already out there in front of the jury.
Yeah.
And even if the judge turned around and said, strike that from the record, they've heard it.
Yeah, they've heard it.
So now they've got this guy who's 315 pounds, bald head with a beard, ex-steroid user, ex-criminal, been in prison for 4.5 years, stood in front of them, trying to convince them that he's honest about what he's saying.
Mm.
You can see where the damage can be done.
Absolutely.
So there's lots of games like that are played in the courtroom.
Interesting.
Because once the information's out, even if the judge says, no, that's not allowed, it's already been said.
So I take it you've had that happen before.
I've had to defend myself, yeah. Mm. There was one who really decided he was going to have a go, and he's gone about integrity and that I have to be impartial as an expert witness, and how can I be impartial if I'm an ex-steroid user, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And I just asked, I interrupted and said, can I stop you there? And he's like, and he said, no, please, just let me answer the question.
Yeah.
And he's tried to work, because they'll try and talk over you and they'll try and force you to say yes or no answer, yes or no answer.
Yeah.
And you've got to stand there and go, Your Honor, if I answer yes or no, it's going to mislead the court. And as soon as you start going down the lines that he's trying to mislead the court, judges get pissed off.
Ooh. Yeah, I bet.
And I just said, Your Honor, may I have time to answer the accusations? And I just turned around and said, do you drink? I'm not on about you're a drunk. I'm just asking, do you enjoy socially drinking alcohol? And he went, yes.
You started asking him questions.
And he's like, yes. And I said, have you ever presided over a case related to drink? And he just went, moving on. And you tread a fine line, and it also depends on the judge. I've had some judges that are quite practical and quite everyday, and I have some judges that are really stiff, rod up the backside types.
Yeah.
And you've got to read the judge very, very quickly to know what you can and can't get away with and how much you can push and how formal you have to be and how informal you can be. Because most juries don't have a great deal of experience in Crown Court, so the formality they find quite imposing. So if you can be quite relaxed and quite informal with them, they warm to you. But you've got to be careful, because if you go too informal, you'll piss the judge off. So you just got to read the room sometimes. And part of it is, yes, you present the evidence as you see it in the best and most honest way you can, but you've got to sell that as well to a jury.
Yeah.
And that's where the difference is between usually a police officer who does expert witness as part of his role within the police, so it's just his job, and it's just another role that he has to do within his salary that he gets paid for, and those that specialize. And what you'll find is you'll find that you'll get expert witnesses that work within the police, they then retire, and as soon as they retire, they become 10 times the expert witness they used to be.
Okay.
because now they're them getting the next job is sort of based on their performance in court.
Yeah.
So they start to take where before they just do the job, deliver the information, and that was it. They now start to become very charismatic and try and engage and the jury and do stuff like that. But ultimately, I mean, I've had cases come and it's like, I can't do anything with that.
Yeah.
You're telling me that he's got a unit with 15 kilos of raw powder and it's 750,000 tablets.
Hmm.
And you're telling me that his defense is it wasn't him and he's not making steroids.
Hmm. Is it legal to manufacture there, like for yourself, like homebrew?
No.
Okay.
It's not legal to manufacture, and it is not legal to import the raw materials in the first place.
But if I were, say, in Thailand, if I lived there and then I went to Thailand, I could bring stuff home for myself, right?
Yes, you could, right. In April 2012, the law changed, and this was from pressure from the Olympic Committee. And basically what they changed it to, it was then illegal to import steroids for personal use. Prior to that, you could order online from overseas and bring them in if it was for personal use.
Hmm.
You can still go overseas and bring them in on your person.
Okay.
Technically, you're supposed to declare that at customs, and if you're in breach of customs and excise evasion, if you don't. But you can legally bring steroids in and not breach any drug laws if it's for personal use. Obviously, again, there's no guideline to personal use, so that's okay. A very gray and open area.
So you couldn't bring like a suitcase full of Tren home?
You can try it. but you can't import.
Yeah.
You can't post it in. Now, even there, and this last case is a prime example, there was an argument off record, but we decided to drop it from the case because he said, no, you can't post steroids full stop, even from within the country. And I said, yes, you can. You can post them domestically. You just can't bring them in internally. The law states that the ban on postal was as importation. And that was a sideline argument that was going on between me and this other expert.
Huh.
We dropped it because it wasn't relevant to the case. But a crafty barrister would use that to try and undermine the credibility of another expert.
Yeah.
See, if you can get an expert on the stand to admit they're wrong or say they don't know, then that jury looks at that person as, and you don't know everything. I mean, fuck me, there's a few times I've been caught in the pants down. Then obviously that jury starts having doubt in that person's ability to comment on the case.
Yeah.
And the ideal situation is that you get the other expert's report removed by the court, so the report then relies on your statement as the evidence from the expert, which is the ideal situation.
That's a really unique position. I don't know anybody else who does that. I thought it'd be definitely unique to talk about on the show. I'm sure people would be interested in it. Before we went to break and answered questions, I wanted to shift gears for a minute because we had a listener that said, hey, can you guys talk a little bit more about the under construction films? And I thought that was a great idea because we reference the movies all the time. We talked about them in a little bit in the first episode, just to kind of see where we are coming from and who you are. But we never really went in depth into it. And I suppose we don't have enough time to really go super in depth this time, but I did want to at least talk a little bit about the movies. So Dave, Under Construction, they were part one and two films by James Grelish. And you were the central figure in those films. They're both available now. I wanted to note, I talked to James and he put together a special code for our listeners if they are interested in buying the movies. So you can get 20% off of those movies now with the code ADVICES20. And
I never agreed this to Robin Twat. Why do I speak to
him? That's 20. The 20% comes out of Dave's cut of the movies.
Yeah, we're not even going there.
Well, I thought it'd be cool if we did set something up like that because, you know, people listen to the shows and these things are for free. And if they wanted to in any way support what we're doing, they could support that by supporting the things that we offer. You know, I mean, I've got t-shirts that we sell at the website. You've got your films, you've got your coaching, you know, I do coaching as well. And that's the, you know, Skip has his website. And so that if you guys like us, then, you know, we encourage you to support us through that way, you know, and continue in either way, regardless, if you enjoy the shows, keep listening, because first and foremost, we just love doing this stuff. But I did want to talk about the films today. How did you and James ever hook up? I never even heard that story.
Painfully. No. We were both, well, I was on a forum called Test and Muscle, which back in the day was it was born out of a frustration that the other forums were a bit trolled out.
Oh, yeah.
In the early days, it was really, really good. And the guy that ran the forum contacted James to do some video promos for the forum. And then he asked me if I would be in one of the video promos. And I said I would. So we went to, oh God, I can't remember the guy's now, British bodybuilder. Can't see much of him for a while, actually. He went vegan. Bernie Duplessis. Duplessis, however you say it. Barney Duplessis. Went down to his gym and we did a promo video. Now, just before that, that dough-ball Jody Marsh, the stupid bin, had brought out a documentary on steroid use, which was an absolute crock of shit. And so I'd been very outspoken on my YouTube channel about how fucking shit it was.
So you were already doing YouTube at that time?
Yeah. Okay. And so James said, I'd like to interview you over the Jody Marsh thing. So obviously he asked me some questions and we did it. And that video got insane hits. For what it was, for who I was as being a relevant nobody and nothing else really. And I think it's still in well over 1 million views.
Wow.
Anyway, I don't know if I'd started the UC project at that point. I may have done. Because that was just a personal project at the time. So I was, well, I must have done because I started my YouTube channel for the UC project.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
So I must have started the UC project at that point.
And what was the first project?
The UC project.
But what was the premise of the project for the people who don't know, who haven't watched the show?
Okay. I was sponsored by a company called SSN. And I was dieting to do a qualifier for the British. And I was sitting at 300 pounds and I was, I think it was 11, 12% on a 7-point caliper test at the time.
Okay.
And I was hating dieting, hating life and really just not enjoying it. But at the same time, I really felt like I was holding myself back from growing. And it sounds crazy, but I just get this constant feeling that if I put food in, I'm going to explode. And I was talking to, we were at Body Power. I was on the stand for SSN, or the UK franchise holder of the brand at the time. And he'd made comment on, it was Rich Piana was still with Mutant at the time. And he said, have you seen the cues that that guy's getting? He says, and that's all because he talks about steroids openly. He said, how would you fancy talking about steroids on your next book? And doing a blog, you know, and we'll do it with SSN. Now, SSN had a hardcore sort of spin-off brand called Muscle Junkie.
Okay.
So the plan was at that point that they would push Muscle Junkie forward off the back of me doing this live growth blog.
Okay.
Anyway, he took that to head office. Head office said, piss off, we're not getting involved with a gear user.
Yeah.
And I said, but I was sold on it. And I had already started thinking, you know what, this would be a really good way to show people the truth about all this. Not just the glorified happy page that everybody gives, but everything, the shit, the crap, the dirtiness, the tiredness, the puking up and all the rest of it that goes with force feeding and trying to get absolutely massive.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of films of people dieting down, but not the other way.
Yeah, and the other thing was, now, people seem to think that I was obsessed with Greg Kovacs and 400 pounds. I wasn't. But when you say to someone, I'm going to try and get as big as I can, that's a very difficult idea to conceptualize in your brain.
Why is that?
Well, how big is big? So if you put a number on it, it makes it a lot easier for people to sort of grasp it.
Yeah, yeah. He's not talking 235. He's talking 400 pounds. That makes sense.
Be relatable. So though I didn't really set 400 as my target in the first film, I did mention it. And the 400 came from the fact that I remember reading years ago that Craig Kovacs was 400 pounds in the offseason.
It was just a way to, yeah, put it all together in your brain too.
Yeah, yeah. So I said to him, look, no disrespect, but I want to do it. I think it could be really good.
Yeah.
And he was like, fine, but you know we can't sponsor you. I said, no, that's not a problem. I said, you know, I'll resign my sponsorship. And he went, yeah, that's fine. So we did a little, I mean, I wasn't a big name or anything. A few people knew who I was, but it was nothing major. So it wasn't a big issue anyway. But I officially resigned my resignation. Didn't make any difference to what I got out of them. But so I officially resigned my sponsorship. Yeah. And then I set off on the project. So I'd gone a fair way through the project, and I was probably sitting at about 350 pounds in the first one. And I stopped at 365 in the first one. And I get a phone call off James.
Yeah.
It's like, you know this thing you're doing? I'm like, yeah. He says, do you want to make a film of it? I went, go on, all right then, why not? Got nothing else to do. He said, there's a problem though. I went, what's up? He says, I ain't got enough money to put petrol in car to come up to film. Can you lend me some money to get up there? I was like, yeah, yeah, not a problem. So, I mean, I didn't have a lot either. So,
yeah.
We did the first film over 3 days.
No kidding.
And though it wasn't, the one stipulation, I mean, I didn't really know James that well. He didn't really know me. But the one stipulation I had was that it's got to be honest.
Yeah. That's your stipulation. That's your stipulation with the podcast too.
Yeah, I don't want it editing to make me look a certain way because that's counterproductive. That's only going to promote. I want to show the shitty sides. I want to show both sides of the coin with this. And so there were things in the film that were, I wouldn't say staged, but like the shopping mall scene. I wasn't going there that day. We planned to go there, but it was something that I did in the process of getting to that size. So we tried to, in those 3 days, we crammed in as much as we could about events and things that had happened in the process going up. Nothing was staged. Everything was live. Everything was real. But it was like, you know, one thing was, how do other people react to you? I said, well, I can cause a stir sometime. We went, right, well, we need to go somewhere where it's busy. I went, all right, well, we'll go to Trafford Centre in Manchester. It'll be busy there. You can film from a distance and watch people's reactions. So that was as far as it got in the sense that it was staged, if you know what I mean.
I gotcha, yeah.
You know, there was no acting involved at all. Everything was as it was. It was just we did some things that I wouldn't have done that week normally, but I have done in the past sort of thing. So we could show examples of what was happening.
Yeah, that makes sense. It makes for a better film.
Yeah. And so that was it. And then James went on his way, edited it all up, and we launched the film.
I didn't realize it was under that short of a period of time.
Well, the editing took several months.
Yeah.
Second film we filmed over 18 months.
Yeah. Now, that was a big project.
I think it's probably 3 or 4 months in editing with James. James nearly, he pretty much had a breakdown over editing that thing.
I bet. In fact, we talked to him. I had him on. I'll see if I can remember which episode it was, but we brought him on to talk about the making of the films, and he talked about how intense it was, especially the second one.
Yeah. And I obviously had other health issues that I was pushing through to try and complete the film. So yeah, and the second project nearly got shelved a few times. And we both felt that because it had cost us both so much in different ways to produce it, that it had to be finished. And I've watched the second one once, and I will not watch it again.
Man, that movie got dark.
Yeah. It's one thing fucking up in life. It's another thing watching it in fucking HD.
Yeah.
But, know, the first one got a lot of criticism. It was very different to what had gone before. I got a lot of criticism because I wasn't what most people regarded as a bodybuilder. And as I say in the film, I never regarded myself as a bodybuilder, really. It was just a convenient label to use trying to explain.
Yeah.
I was a bloke that enjoyed lifting weights and enjoyed being big. And a lot criticized. The main concern for most people was condition. Few people criticized strength levels. Few people criticized that it was drug promoting. I never really felt it was, but I could see why someone would feel it was.
Yeah.
I just wanted to show a balanced view. And I think, if anything, the second film was probably more anti-drug because it was so dark and so negative was the second film. But yeah, so, I mean, they just track. And we didn't want to make a bodybuilding film full of training because everybody's done that and everybody's seen training. Okay. We wanted to make it more of a human story. And we wanted to make it more of an individual's journey. And surprisingly, I've had a lot of people that have messaged over the years who aren't into training or who aren't into bodybuilding, but their partners were, and they've watched the film and found it thoroughly enjoyable as just watching, you know, the sort of fly on the wall documentary of some big daft northern idiot. Shit.
No, it was entertaining, and I remember I watched them with my significant other at the time. She was entertained by the first one. The second one, she said she didn't like it. She said it was too dark. I liked it, but it definitely was like it. You know, I can imagine when you say it was harder. It was hard for you to watch. It was harder for me to watch. And when I think about it. I think about the emotion that was in that, and it just had a dark feeling overall. But it was very good, very well done too.
It was very raw. And the thing is, I have complete. I never watched. James offered me edited versions that I could have an impact into changing before they were released. But I trusted him throughout the process to just do what he wanted to do with it.
Yeah,
and he never let me down. And the one thing I'll say with James is he's got a real skill and a real talent for showing something how it needs to be shown when he edits stuff up. I mean, he had hundreds and hundreds of hours of footage. In fact, we have enough film probably to make 3-4 documentary spin-offs. But we've never bothered because they won't be as concentrated as the first two films, and we just think it will weaken what we've done.
That makes sense.
We've discussed doing a third, but neither has really have the time or, to be honest, the drive to go there through that again.
And it would be very different now.
They would be very different now. We'd want to do something that was unique and groundbreaking again.
Yeah.
They appeal to a lot of people who didn't fit the stereotypical bodybuilding image. And I found that you became a bit of a, wrong words really, but I can't think of any other phrase, but a bit of a pin-up for every man. You know, for the average guy that just trains, has a bit of a gut, but likes feeling big and strong.
You're relatable.
Yeah, probably a better way of putting it. You know, you were very relatable, and it was like, well, if he can do it, and he's, then I can be all right with it.
Absolutely.
And I think to a degree, it sent a message that you don't have to be lean and have a six-pack to lift weights and enjoy it and be proud that you lift weights.
Yeah.
You know? But they were definitely, particularly the second one, was definitely a very difficult journey for me. And I found... Oh, it's just a lot easier now looking back, but I found myself going down some rabbit holes I didn't think I'd go down. And I found myself becoming more and more drug focused and less training focused. And literally sat there thinking, what else or what more can I take?
And that's been a huge change. I think that, you know, we've talked before, I think we talked in the first episode of this show about how People had, you know, there are people that didn't like you that think like, oh, Dave Crossland's just a drug guy. And I think that it kind of probably evolved from that image of you, though that's not who you are today. And I think people who've given the show a chance now know that.
That wasn't even who I was beforehand. I got lost in the second one.
Yeah.
So I got what made me almost, I mean, James never engaged with the negative comments, and he used to bollock me for engaging with them.
Mm.
And he said, just let it go. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter if you're Mr. Olympia, the best ever been. There'll be someone that will slag you off. So just let it go.
Oh, yeah.
And that was a lesson I had to learn. But what I found ironic, that first film, the highest I went was 4.5 grams total.
Okay, so there's average guys that are doing 4.5 grams. I mean, it's a lot, but...
It's a lot. I'm not going to play it down. No insulin, no growth hormone.
Okay.
I was 365 pounds. I was repping 300 key on a squat, 300 pee on a deadlift. I was behind the neck pressing 220 for 5. I was benching 220 for 5, and I was bent over rowing 260 for 4.
Hmm. And when you say 220, you're talking kilos.
Kilos.
Yeah, that's a lot of weight.
So when you stack that against guys running 3, 3.5, and 4 gram, which is a lot more commonplace. The only difference was I had the balls to stand there and say, you know what, this is what I'm doing. Judge me how you like.
Yeah.
And so though I got a lot of criticism of the very high user and being a big abuser of drugs, and there is truth in that. You know, there's no way I can justify those doses as being reasonable. Yeah. They're not. They are excessive. They are extreme. But it's a lot more commonplace than people like to accept.
Hmm.
And a lot of the people that were criticizing were hypocrites.
Okay, yeah.
And it, if it wasn't that I was using far too many drugs, it was that I was far too fat.
Hmm.
And yet when I stopped UC1, I did a PCT initially. And when the water dropped, I was 355 pounds and the abs started to show. Hmm. They weren't through, but you could see where they were going to be. So, but I mean, yeah, they were incredible journeys. I learned a lot. I tested myself a lot about myself. And there were some dark times and I went down some wrong paths and there were a few points where, especially on the second one, where I was definitely heading in a very bad direction.
Hmm.
But ultimately, I came out the other side having learned more than I knew before I started them.
Yeah, absolutely. And now and I feel like what you learned was a valuable lesson, and it's stuff that you're sharing to this day.
Well, how can you talk about someone doing 4 or 5 grams if you've not done it? Yeah, but I mean, to be truth, you can say what the textbooks say, but you can't say, well, you know what? I understand what you're feeling, and I understand why you're wanting to go there, and I understand why you're acting the way you are and why you're so focused on the drug use as you are at the moment, because I've been through that experience.
Yeah.
I know the changes that happen in your brain from real world experience. I know that your focus shifts towards drugs. I know that you start to rely on chemicals more than you should. And that general grinding down that the toxicity does to your body and that general feeling of shit that you fob off and fob off and fob off and fob off until you get to the point when you're really fucked and you just think, how the hell did I get here? But it's been happening over the last 6 months. You've gradually been moving in that direction. I've been there. I've lived it. I know what it's like to walk away from a 5-plate bench having repped it to now only be able to do 2 and 3.
Yeah.
I know what that experience is like now of coming down the other way. I know what it's like to lose your size, to lose your strength, to some degree lose your identity. And I know how difficult it is to regain your identity when so much of your time and focus has been focused on creating a physical identity and not an individual identity. I mean, there was always the background idea that the more popular the films got and the more popular I got through the films and the projects would allow me to expose harm reduction to a wider audience.
Yeah.
So there was always that element to it as well.
Yeah, that makes sense, man. Under Construction 2, was that, now you said, was that one or two when you got to the 4.5 grams?
I hit 4.5 grams of one, but I didn't stay there for a particularly long period of time.
Okay, and then two, you...
Two was supposed to be 4 grams, okay. And insulin and growth.
Okay, I gotcha.
The problem with two was that it was supposed to be a more condensed cycle, so 4 months.
Oh, I see.
I ended up being on 18 months.
Whew.
Not those doses. They went up and down.
Yeah.
I got injured. As soon as we started the project, I got injured.
That's not a good start.
And so I thought, oh, I'll be right in a week. I'll be right in a week. I'll be right in a week. Before I knew it, those weeks turned into a month, 6 weeks. So it's like, shit, I better bring dose down. So I brought dose down, but I won't come off. I'll just bring dose down a bit. Give it a couple of weeks and I'll be able to. And that happened a few times. And before you knew, you look back and it was 6-7 months gone.
Yeah.
Because there was so much cognitive disassociation. There was so much I was lying to myself about.
I see.
You know, and so much I played down and thought, no, and time just escaped you. And then I used huge amounts of growth and huge amounts of insulin.
I remember when I met you, it was shortly after UC2 was out, and we did an interview, and you said, well, I'm just going to, you were off at the time. Said, I've been off for about 6 months now, and when I start back up, I'm just going to do like a moderate cycle. I think you said like 600 tests, and you're like, in like 25 units of growth every day. Human grade growth. I was like, what?
Yeah, never again.
Moderate, 25 units of growth.
Yeah, I mean this is the changing of your perceptions.
Exactly, man. Exactly. You know,
and this is the journey you go on when you lose sight of almost reality.
Yeah.
And it's only when you come out the other side and you look back, you can see it. When you're there, you just don't see it. I mean, I've never seen my size. Even now, I mean, I think I'm a skinny rat. and then I just odd now and again, somebody would, you know, I'll see a picture of me with somebody else, and I'm like, I'm a bit bigger than I thought I was. But no, they were costly projects.
Oh,
they
yeah.
were. The emotional toll on those projects was huge, and to a degree, the health toll was rather large as well. But you know what? And I mean, this is going to sound corny as fuck, and it's going to sound really, really cheesy.
All right, I'm sitting down.
Are you ready?
Ready.
But if me going through all that crap stops someone else from fucking themselves up, or has created a platform where I can help people not make mistakes, or I can help people keep themselves safe, then it was worth it, really.
Yeah.
And I know it sounds corny, and I know it sounds a bit contrived, but I genuinely am passionate about what I do now.
Yeah, no, yeah, that comes through.
I mean, like, well, I'll give you an example. So yesterday started at 5:30 in the morning, and I finished work at 9:00 last night. This morning started at 6:00 this morning, and I'll finish at 9:00 tonight. Tomorrow starts at 4:00 in the morning, and we'll finish about 1:00 in the morning.
Wow.
Thursday's not so bad. I'll start at 6:00 and I'll be done for 7 or 8 or 8, 9 at night. And then Friday we'll start at 4:00 in the morning and we'll finish at 3:00 in the morning.
Jesus.
And the reason I can do those hours, and don't get me wrong, I can't do those hours every week, but the reason I can do it, because I love what I do.
Yeah. It's cool, man. It's really evolved into so much. I mean, we are talking about the work you're doing with the court system, you know, the work that you do with the police, just the general education that you provide through YouTube and through this show, plus, I mean, just everything else, man. It's a lot. Listen, we're running long, so let's jump to a quick break. And when we come back, we've got a bunch of questions. And also, for anybody that does want to check the movies out, I've got the site here. It's underconstructionthefilm.com. And once again, James put together a code just for our show, advices20. So definitely, guys, check them out. If you haven't seen the movies, they are definitely worth a watch, especially now that you guys know Dave and where he's at today. It'll be an interesting thing to go back on. So what do you say we jump to break, Dave?
That's fine, mate.
All right, guys, we will be back in just a minute. Hey, what's up, guys? I wanted to take this break and give some credit where credit is due. He didn't ask me to do this commercial, but I am doing it. And that's because I'm grateful. So thank you, Dave Crossland. Thank you for your contribution here at Advices Radio. And thank you for your contribution to bodybuilding as a whole. Guys, you can check out more of Dave over at his website. It's crosslands.org.uk. That's crosslands.org.uk. Crosslands Harm Reduction Service specializes in providing concise, informative, and effective drug training to a wide range of professionals, as well as advising individual users. And be sure to check out his YouTube page. It's at UC The Freak. That's the letter U, the letter C, The Freak. So you can't miss him there. The guy's all over YouTube. All right, guys, we will get back to the program in just a moment. Hey guys, Scott McNally here.
And this is VJ Peary.
You guys know us from here at the Advices Radio Network. Well, we also have another show, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. We've got everything from supplement reviews
to shout outs,
listener questions,
and of course, our weekly bodybuilding podcast reviews.
So check us out every Friday.
Or whenever you feel like cooking or doing your cardio or basically wasting time with us.
You can hear us at bodybuildingnerds.com.
Also on iTunes. Bodybuilding Nerds, it's time to get nerdy.
All right, guys, and we are back. Dave Crossland with Drugs and Stuff. I'm Scott McNally. I just pulled it up, Dave. The first time that I had you on, it was Advices Radio Episode 3, and that was on May 12th, 2016. So it's been a little while.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
I remember. I think you were the first podcast I did.
Really?
I think so, yeah.
I remember I messaged you, and I said, and it was like in the morning, and I had just started Advices, obviously. I messaged you, and I was like, I wanted to set up an interview. And I was like, wow, he'd be really cool to interview and stuff. And you were like, okay, yeah, can you do it in about 20 minutes? I was like, okay. And we knocked it out. I was like, give me a little more time, because I had the movie, and I wanted to like watch back through it and get notes and, you know, put together something that was, you know, had some meat to it. But yeah, we jumped on it that morning.
Oh, God. I remember I did one with, can't remember his name. Oh, well, it doesn't matter. It'll come to me.
I've heard you on a lot of shows.
I think it was something to do with bodybuilding.com.
Oh, really?
No, it's gone. Never mind.
All right. Well, we got a bunch of questions.
I think he's something to do with bodybuilding.com now. He might not have been back then.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't see bodybuilding.com wanting to feature Under Construction so much.
I can't remember. He was very supportive. He was one of the first guys in the States that really picked it up.
Really?
Matt Meinrod.
Oh, Matt Meinrod. Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Project Bodybuilding.
Yes. I don't know if it was either you or him was the very first podcast I did.
Okay. Huh.
Matt got behind it in a big way in the early days.
And then I started working for Project Bodybuilding for a time a little bit later after that.
Yeah, nice guy.
Yeah, great podcast they put out. We've got a bunch of questions lined up here, so I figured we could just jump straight into them. Here's one that this will be information I'll be curious to talk about too, because I just started working with a guy who's on TRT dosing. His cholesterol isn't perfect. Obviously, the TRT isn't going to help that, and I'm sure he's going to be listening to this too. This is from the Instagram page. It says, lipid management on a TRT dose cruise. especially getting down LDL. Is there anything else to do other than cardio, healthy diet, and fish oil?
Yeah, if you are running estrogen management, then you need to look at your estrogen management choices. So you want to avoid 8X and look more towards aromasin. 8X is quite impacting on lipid profiles, so it's not a good choice if you've already got dodgy lipids. The other supplement-wise, citrus bergamot would be very useful. That will help increase HDL, which in turn will scrub LDL. And I've seen quite impressive results of very high vitamin C.
Really?
Yeah, and we're talking the sort of 5 to 10 gram region.
Okay.
Now, anyone that, and make sure you're taking pure vitamin C as well, not the filled up crap. So you're looking for ascorbic acid and versions of. But don't put it all in one it, because you will be shitting through the eye of a needle for a week.
Through the eye of a needle.
You need to build into it. And gradually build it up and space it out throughout the day.
Okay.
Cardamine has shown quite positive regarding cholesterol levels. The problem with that particular SARM peptide, whatever you want to, I think it's a SARM, isn't it? Yeah.
I think it's a SARM.
Yeah, I get mixed up with some of them because they're not quite SARMs. It's like MK isn't a SARM, it's a peptide.
Right.
Obviously, that's an odd one because it was abandoned in research because it caused cancer in every test subject they put it into.
At high doses, right?
But the doses were astronomically high in comparison to what you would use. I'm still a little bit uneasy about saying use a drug that has that potential.
Yeah.
Particularly with such a low amount of research into its effects long term. But there's no denying that that is particularly positive on lipid profiles.
Yeah. Now, I tried Carterine, and when I started it, I was out training with Shelby Starnes, who's pretty well educated guy, and he had just gone to do a bunch of heart work, check out everything. Do some tests and everything to make sure his heart was healthy, which he did find it was. After a life of bodybuilding, taking it to the pro level, he's doing really good. He's very healthy and he's very focused on his health. He had said while talking to the doctor, he wondered whether it would be beneficial or not, even if it did change the numbers, because he said from what he had read and when he talked to the doctor about. So the case with niacin will improve your numbers, but there's never been a correlation between improving those numbers through niacin and outcomes. So outcomes could still be the same, even though the cholesterol was changed. There's no benefit in outcomes, it said.
Yeah, and I thought this on a few occasions about a few of the go-tos that we have.
Okay.
How much are they actually preventing damage, or how much are they just altering the numbers so we can live with ourselves?
Right.
Are they a painkiller? So they remove pain but don't remove the injury? Or are they actually helping with the injury? TUDCA being one. Because all we have to really see if these products are working is the blood results.
Yeah.
And I do wonder sometimes if some of the results we get or the supplements we take that change the results we get are actually correcting the problem and just masking it.
Yeah.
But it's obviously an area that there just isn't a great deal of study in, because it's not ever been felt it was necessary to study it that great deal. I mean, steroid research in humans, particularly at recreational doses, is growing. Yeah. It is definitely becoming more of a focus on for certain researchers anyway. So I'm hoping we will start to see more conclusive evidence over the coming years as exactly what happens in certain scenarios with certain drugs.
Yeah.
But up to press, a lot of it is transcribed information from other studies that never quite fit what we do. You know, I mean, there's never been a study on the effects of insulin growth hormone test, DECA and TREN.
Yeah.
Human being that's 280 pounds and eating huge 6,000 calories a day. You know, we just never have that test scenario.
Yeah. And like Scott Stevenson has talked about, it wouldn't be ethical to set that up. So it would be hard to get, you know, to get that together. You'd have to, I guess you could find people that were all doing it, but it wouldn't be ethical to say, hey, take all this gear, you know, and let's see what happens.
Where's your control? And that's the problem with it, isn't it? So, I mean, a lot of people will shy away from anecdotal evidence and observational evidence. But to be honest, these studies come off the back of anecdotal or observational evidence. They come off the back of somebody observing a pattern. So they will say, God, I've got a lot of bodybuilders coming through with FSGS, or, you know, kidney issues, and I wonder if they're all taking steroids. I wonder if there's a link. So let's have a look. You know, that's how these things start. So I've always been very, very much kept an eye on general feedback of what people are experiencing as a way to sort of gauge potential problems from ongoing usage with certain compounds or certain styles of usage.
Yeah.
I mean, I was shouting about the fact that steroids were addictive and mentally damaging to mental health and weren't just, were causing structural and chemical changes within the brains long-term years ago. And I was told by the academic community that I work within that, shut the fuck up, you daft twat. You don't know what you're talking about. Bollocks. Where now they're turning around and going, yeah, we've got studies that 60 to 70% of all steroid users will become drug dependent, either mentally or physically. And yeah, we've now got studies showing malformation of the brain. We've now got studies showing disruption to CB receptors and serotonin transport and neuropeptide Y and amygdala malformations and all sorts of stuff. And it's like, yeah, I was telling you there was something wrong fucking 4 years ago. Couldn't tell you what. I could just tell you that it ain't right, mate. You know, I speak to these people daily. I watch them daily, and the behavior patterns are changing. And it's, I think, anyway, we've come very off some topic here.
Yeah, we have. but it was, it all makes sense. It all tied together.
But yeah, you know, going back to the actual question at hand with cholesterol, there's a few things you can do. Like I say, vitamin C, such as bergamot, carnelian's an option, obviously cardio diet. But now this is the other thing, and not wanting to go all conspiracy theory on you, but not all LDL is bad.
Okay, I've heard this. How can you differentiate what's good and bad?
Well, you can't really without some very expensive and very specialist testing. Okay. And we obviously generally test just LDL, but there are several different types of LDL. And the test just gives you an overall general view. And so it's not not conclusive to just say it's bad. At the same time, though, let's not twist this and say, well, that just means that my LDL is good then, even if it's high, because it doesn't. You know if your diet's shit.
Yeah.
You know if you're using shitloads of gear, et cetera, et cetera. So it's be sensible. Don't use things for excuses to justify shit behavior.
Yeah. I'll throw one in too. Turmeric, or I would use curcumin. It's known as it's been getting a lot of play lately for anti-cancer, anti-inflammation, as a strong antioxidant. Plus they're seeing that it's really good for its ability to lower cholesterol.
I'd like to see more evidence on it, but yeah, why not?
Yeah, there it's out there.
It isn't there. But what I mean is, I'd like to read some evidence on that because I haven't looked into it.
I could show you a couple things that I've seen, and I got into it for its anti-inflammatory purposes. And I could say that after a year of taking it, looking back, I could definitely tell just, you know, it's not like taking ibuprofen where, you know, you instantly feel pain relief type thing and you know, it works instantly. But just my overall quality of health, I think, has been better just keeping it in. It's definitely one that I suggest to people. John Meadows always suggests the Life Extension brand. They have super biocurcumin, which is the issue can be its bioavailability. And this particular version has been studied to show that it's the most bioavailable.
Okay.
So I'll move on here. We got a whole bunch of good questions. Up next we had, okay, this is one, and this is something that you guys don't have an issue with at all in the UK. I have a question, and so far, everyone seems to skirt around it. For bodybuilders who travel to different countries, how the hell do they stay on their cycles? With the border crossing, searches at airports, if they are traveling to train in a different country, how do they ensure they have what they need? I've actually gone out of my way to not answer this question in the past, personally. But if you guys, it wouldn't be a problem all through the UK. What about if you leave the country?
Yeah, well, Spain, you're fine. Turkey, you're fine. Most of Eastern Europe, you're fine. Obviously, different countries have different laws. Scandinavian countries tend to be rather strict, so I wouldn't risk it over there. I mean, it used to be... I always get mixed up whether it's Sweden or Norway. I think it's Norway, but I believe it was Tony Freeman got off a plane and basically got told, go back on the plane or we're going to send you to jail.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was Sweden.
Because their law at the time allowed people who looked like they used steroids to be arrested.
Yeah, because they had done something illegal to look like that.
Yes, that's now being challenged in European law.
Is it?
And officially can no longer be, because it's discrimination. So officially it can no longer be justification for arrest, but that's not to say that that isn't what happens in real life. However, in general, I think most people will source in the country they're going into, particularly pros.
Yeah.
Obviously, pros are at the invite generally of a federation, and they are going with into a community within that country that's aware of usage, so will no doubt have contact on availability of what they need.
Sure.
And I know a couple of pros that have toured here from overseas that have picked up what they need while they were here rather than bring it with them.
Yeah, that'd be smarter.
So I would have said for most, that would be the route they would go.
If you have to fly within the country here at the U.S., there's a couple options I would think of. And one I mentioned before was if you have a TRT prescription, I've known guys that if, you know, they're leaving for a show, they're taking test trend, master on, they could just fill their bottle with that and put it in the airplane. No problem. You're not traveling with a bunch of Tren. You're traveling with one vial that's labeled for HRT use and you have a prescription for it. And the other option, and I'm hesitant to say it, but it's the mail. You just mail it. Flat out. It's easy.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously that's definitely an option to some degree for people as well.
I think it'd be a little riskier once you start when you're talking about like international stuff, you know, that now you got to deal with customs and all that. And if you're trying to get it into a country where it wasn't legal, you could run into problems. And no matter what, we take risks as bodybuilders. So I guess you just have to weigh it out. In a lot of cases, if it's a short trip, I feel like you can go without, you know, unless you're coming into a show.
Yeah, I mean, I know a few people that work offshore, and obviously taking with them is definitely not an option.
Okay.
And as a result, they tend to alter the way they run their cycles because they're only away for a couple of weeks. So what they tend to do is they'll do an element of a bit of a stack before they go away.
Okay.
I mean, it's not, obviously, it's a compromise. None of these things are ideal.
Yeah.
And then they will front load a little bit with fast acting when they get back.
Okay. Probably some long acting stuff before they leave.
Yeah, you're throwing a bit of long acting and slightly over the dose you're going to require. And then a bit of fast acting when you get back, just to get levels back up as soon as you get back.
Yeah.
Again, not ideal, not perfect, but it's just about minimizing that lull while you're away.
And yeah, if you're going to go on vacation with your family to Disney, you don't need to bring gear with you. I would just take long acting weekly dose before you go, you know?
And the other thing is, you know, not being funny, but plan a little bit. You didn't exactly wake up on Monday morning and think, you know what, let's go to Disney on Friday. You know, the vacations, holidays, whatever you want to call them, seeing that we're using both words now.
Yes.
Are usually fairly well planned. And so you should at least be able to plan your cycle around that to some degree.
Yeah, yeah. But if not, you're going away for 5 days. It's not the end of the world. You're not going to shrink, right?
No. And people do get very anal and very obsessive about dosings when they're on cycle.
Yeah.
You know, and they get very paranoid about, oh, well, I'm going to miss a cycle by a day. Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Get a grip.
Yeah.
Fucking hell. I mean, I used to forget jabs all over the place.
It still worked, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You can't be inconsistent all the time, but I suspect for 90% of people there are far bigger inconsistencies in what they're doing than being 2 days late with a jab.
That's a great point right there.
And this is, you know, people get so obsessed. It's like people get so obsessed over macros and diet, and you see them looking at food and calculating in their head whether they can have it or not. And I'm thinking, you know, mate, that extra bit of meat that you're having on your plate there, or that extra bit of food you're having there, is going to be far less damaging than the fact that you train like an absolute and complete fucking fanny when you go to the gym.
Yeah.
I've said it numerous times and I'll say it again. You can out train shitty diet, you can't out eat shitty training.
I've got one here, a female question. Cycles for women that aren't 5 milligrams Anavar.
10 milligrams Anavar?
And she's IFB pro, to throw it out there. She's got some good muscle on her. Women's physique.
Women's physique?
Yes.
I don't think, and I've never believed in really saying that there's a set cycle, do this or do that or do the other.
Okay.
I very much think cycles should be progressive. And it should be based on what's gone before. And they can be very individual. Now, more so with females, because more so depending on how much risk they're willing to take regards virilization. Hmm. Deca, I've always found to be quite a good drug for females. Tren can be used, but you'd be using it in very low doses. And we're talking 10, 15 milligram doses. Hmm. But it's very, very, very effective for females and very, very potent, as it is for males. But we are talking sort of what would be almost microdosing in comparison to how males would run it. Oxys are usually very well tolerated by females. Medicinally, oxys are given to females and women, females and children with quite high doses. Hmm. And I've found usually they're very well tolerated by females as well. But it would all, a lot would be, you know, what's gone before and what are you looking to achieve and what are you willing to risk?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously for most females, the big issue is virilization. The big issue is turning male effectively. And even on low doses of Anavar, you do it for long enough and you're going to start getting virilization. And certain women are just more susceptible to do it. I know a female who was on grams of Deca. And to be fair, virilization was really quite minimal. They're retired now. They don't use anything at all, and they've downsized massively. But their virilization was very, very minimal. I've known tests. I've known women run 100, 200 mega tests a week.
So it's super individual.
It is. I do find with women more so, yes. And more so what they feel is acceptable in themselves.
Yeah.
There's a certain level of virilization in a woman that for some people is probably visually enhancing. Yes. So it's down to individual tastes as well, and what that person wants as in a sense. I mean, if you're already pro, I suppose it would very much be the difference between making a career and making the numbers.
Yeah.
And it's just how much you want to risk. So I don't think there's an exact, but very much based on previous experience, but definitely drugs like Primo, EQ, Deca, Oxy are all viable for females in use.
I've heard of a lot of women at in the women's physique division using Proviron. What do you think of that?
Sorry, say again, please, Scott.
I've heard of a lot of women in women's physique using Proviron. What do you think of that for women?
Yeah, I like it. I think it's quite a good drug. It's mild on virilization, and seems to be very effective. In general, females need very little to respond.
Okay, good stuff here. Next question. I was wondering what both of you think about upper arm cuff blood pressure readers versus wrist cuff readers. I have an upper arm cuff machine, and I can consistently get different numbers readings back to back, and I can't quite get the cuff to fit flush to the upper arm without wrapping it around at an angle. I feel like the wrist cuff reader would prevent many of these variables, but after listening to an episode of Superhuman Radio, they say our current blood pressure machines are inaccurate and not effective at reading blood pressure. I'll jump in to start out, Dave, and say that from what I understand, the wrist cuff readers, the further away you get from your heart, the less accurate they are.
I agree.
So you'll be more likely to get a better reading from the upper arm. And also, you want to make sure that cuff fits, that the machine is going to come with the standard size cuff. But you need the big guy cuff if you're in bodybuilding. You don't want to have it so it's just like super tight on your arm. You want to have like a lot of extra room to play with in that thing.
Yeah, the other thing as well is that when you start getting into the bigger cuffs, you start finding that you get bigger fitment issues.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Hmm.
And you start getting more and more variance in the results.
Oh, really? Okay.
It is a problem, and it is a pain in the ass. I've always had issues getting accurate blood pressure readings. And I've always had problems getting the cuffs to fit properly. And I've even got five cuffs for my arms, and I still have problems.
Oh, wow.
Because they're just not designed for that size of limb in that short amount of space.
Yeah.
And so it can cause problems. I'm not a fan of the wrist readers. They're better than nothing. But I think if you're going to have something that's a compromised reading system like a wrist reader, then you're looking more for changes than you are for, you know, than you are for exact readings.
That makes sense.
So for working more off a change, I used to go to a nurse who did it the old-fashioned way.
What's the old-fashioned way?
The old-fashioned way is using the old hand pump pressure meeting and then listening to your blood pressure.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And your blood flow and everything. And she was incredibly accurate.
Yeah.
Incredibly accurate by doing it that way. So, I think if you're going to struggle with a reading, then you're probably best looking at more looking for variants.
Okay.
If you're having to use a device that isn't going to be particularly accurate.
I found too, if you take your machine into your doctor's office, you can test it against, you know, you can test it against the nurse who does the hand pump, you know, and is very accurate. You can test it against that, see where you fall. Sometimes you can find that your machine might be off, but it's consistently off. That's a possibility too.
Yeah. And my local doctor actually does that for me.
Okay.
I can go in and check my machine, and then we can compare readings and notes, and then obviously I've got an idea of where my machine is.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. How often do you check your blood pressure?
Not as often as I should, really.
Okay.
I used to do it sort of periodically throughout the week. I didn't have a set routine, but I'd make sure I fired it in four or five times a week. At various different times to get an average of reading. But you, after a while, you sort of get to the point where you know when you're going out, you know when it's high.
That's where I'm at. And if I feel like it's high, then I take my blood pressure to verify.
Yeah.
But usually my blood pressure is pretty good, but if I am holding a lot of water, it will go up. Let's see here. I'm looking through our questions, looking for a good one. Says, if on TRT for life, what blast length do you recommend for consistent gains throughout the years to come? Generally, I hear 12 weeks, but would like Dave's opinion. In the past, I've run test and DECA under a gram for 12 weeks or 10 weeks, respectively, then TRT at 125 milligrams of test per week for 4 to 5 months before blasting again. Would shorter blasts / cruises be smarter, healthier? Love the new show and all the rest. And this is from IDFA Danny.
I don't think a shorter blast but a higher dose is going to be just as toxic and stressful as a longer blast with a lower dose, really.
Okay.
You know, it's dose and duration are two definite factors that play a role in health implications.
Hmm.
But even running 300 mg a week for 10 years is going to have some quite severe health implications at the end of 10 years. So, you know, the two factors do definitely play a role. What's ideal? How long's a piece of string? It's like, you know, there's so many factors that come into this, in lifestyle, in diet, in training, in everything else. If your training is optimized, your diet is optimized, you probably get away with a lot lower dose and a lot less duration than if the two of them are a bit crap. But if the two of them are a bit crap, then unfortunately the longer duration and the higher dose is going to have more of an impact on health because you've already got a shitty diet and shitty training. So I don't feel there is an optimal, but it's definitely a case of listening to yourself. And I think very much when you start to see training stagnate or even start going backwards, or you start to feel slightly under the weather on a continual basis, then chances are you've been on too long and you need to get off.
Mm, yeah.
Looking at bloods is obviously going to help monitor health, but sometimes your bloods look okay and you just feel like shit. You feel a little bit run down, you don't feel great, training's becoming a bit of a chore. Chances are you've turned toxic and you just need to get off the gear. You know, bloods don't show everything. So it needs to be a combination of blood work and generally how you feel.
Yeah, that I could see that. That's a very practical advice too.
Yeah, and I've seen it myself. You know, you get into your start cycle. Oh, great! Yeah, you feel like you're growing by the minute. Mm. Every time you train, weight's going up, reps are going up, something's improving. Good, good, good. Then all of a sudden, you have a crappy one.
Mm.
It happens.
Yeah.
Next one's good. Then you have a crappy one, and then you have another crappy one, and then you have a good one. And then you have another crappy one. And when you start getting to that point, it's like, whoa, hang on a minute. You know, something's happening here.
Mm, yeah.
And when you start to stagnate, quite often, if you're starting to get negative training sessions or negative feelings, you feel a bit roughy, you feel a bit run down, you've probably been on too long. Jump off. Yeah. Let it up. Go again. Whether you choose PCT or you choose cruise is down to how you're approaching your training and your drug consumption yourself.
You know what, Dave? I think that's where people make a mistake. Because in bodybuilding, what is this about? We pride ourselves on grinding hard, pushing against, you know, adversity and overcoming, and those negative things start happening, and we just say, well, we got to take more. I got to try harder. Got to work harder. Got to eat more. Got to take more gear.
I've always had a very simple rule of thumb. If I have a shitty workout, it's a shitty workout. Yeah. If I have two shitty workouts, I stick my head up and start paying attention.
Mm.
If I have three in a row, I'm changing something. Okay. I'm definitely reviewing what I'm doing.
Okay. Would you stop that at that point and say, hey, I'm going to take a rest day and figure this out?
I would have a look and see, you know, right, okay, I've had three shitty workouts on the trot. What's going on? What's my sleep like? Well, my sleep's been a bit disrupted. All right. Why is my sleep disrupted? Well, you know. So I'd start analyzing. Okay, let's take a couple of days off. Go at it again. See if my sleep improves. So a couple of days off. Make sure diet's on point. Does my sleep improve? No. Is my training still shitty? Yes. Okay. What else am I doing? Let's look at the chemicals. How long have I been on? What sort of doses am I running? You know, yeah, well, I've been on now 10, 11 weeks, I'm running 2 gram. Yeah, I've probably been on too long. Let's drop down to a cruise and see what happens. Drop down to a cruise, straight away, within a week, 2 weeks, feeling better, training harder, appetite's back, eating well, there you go, it was the drugs.
Nice.
Remember, this is a long-term game.
We don't talk about that a lot. And if you go to the message boards, the advice you just shared is not something you're going to hear. What you're going to hear, and this is why I think that just like a general black and white, you know, protocol for gear isn't great, is because you're just going to hear 12 weeks. Well, what happens if I start feeling that way at 8 weeks, Dave? You know, the advice you're sharing, it gives me an answer to that now.
Yeah, and a lot of that's dose. You know, 12 weeks on a gram, gram and a half, probably fine. You're pushing up to 2.5 and 3 gram, you're probably fine. You're done at 8.
Yeah. But even regardless, it's like if you're not feeling good, you got to stop and analyze it then. You don't just do 12 weeks because that's what the guy on the board told you works, you know?
No, not at all. You need to take some review and you know, feed that back into a process. Not always a process that you can always adhere to yourself, because we were talking about the UCs earlier. We were talking about going down that rabbit hole, getting a little bit lost.
Yeah.
So it's good practice to always have somebody in your life who knows what you're doing honestly, and then can review that honestly. Okay, let him in. Get the dogs out of the way. Shut footy down here. Sorry about that. Got interrupted.
Oh, no problem.
There's always points in your, you know, it's always handy to have someone in the background who is neutral.
Yeah.
Because the other thing is behavior. And this particularly can become an issue when you're prepping for a competition. But the other problem is behavior. So it's like, you're acting a cunt, mate. You're acting an arsehole. You're really being a dick here. You know, wind your fucking... You don't see it.
Yeah.
No, I'm focused. I'm competing. No, it's not. It's everyone else that's pissing me off because they're eating donuts in front of me. No, you're being an office. Now... Granted, we all know that in contest prep, that time will come. It's unavoidable.
Yeah.
But there is a point that when it's pointed out to you, at least you can then be aware of it. So you start to be a little bit conscious then more about your behavior and start to self-regulate a bit better. And it's the same, the opposite way, you know? if you're honest with somebody about what's happening, they can quite often give you a lot better view on what's going on and what you're doing.
Yeah, for sure.
And that can be your partner, it can be a coach. You can do it yourself as well, but you've just got to be very honest about it. You've got to be very factual about it.
You got to be able to look at yourself too, which I think it can be harder to do on your own.
It can. I mean, logbooks can be useful. I don't like logbooks because I feel they encourage bad behavior.
Hmm.
But it is definitely a way of saying, well, you know what? I've not increased in strength or reps for 4 weeks. Nothing. There's been no changes in my training in 4 weeks.
Yeah.
I'm on cycle. Something's wrong. And the thing is, this is something that we don't do long term. You know what? In the last 3 years, how much have you improved?
Hmm.
Or the last 2 years? What did you look like 2 years ago? What was your body weight? What was your condition like?
Damn.
What was your strength?
So the what big is it picture. Like?
Because you see people, and people live in the moment too much sometimes. So they'll go on a cycle. Oh, weight's going up, strength's going up. Is it? Yeah. All right. But you're 2 kilos down and 50 pound lighter on your pressers than you were at this time last year in your cycle. So even though you're improving at this point, you're not improving overall. So what's happening is you're improving on cycle, then you're going backwards when you come off cycle.
Huge.
And that's why you're not linearly progressing.
That's huge.
And you get that a lot. But you're happy because in the moment you're improving.
Mm. Wow, yeah.
So you've got to look at this in different stages. You know, you've got to look at the overall picture, the long-term picture, but sometimes you have to look at that moment as well and see a balance across the board.
It's that instant gratification we could get wrapped up in. Hey, I'm feeling stronger right now, but yeah, am I better than I was a year ago?
When you start looking at people that use high doses or regular doses of growth hormone and insulin, and when you start posing these questions, so you're using growth insulin, yeah. Why? God, because it makes me massive. Okay, and what's happened? I've put 30 pounds on in the last 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Great. Massive, fantastic. And what's happened to your condition? No real great change. Yeah, great. Okay. Didn't you do that last year? Yeah, yeah. So what was your start weight before you started this cycle? Well, the same as your start weight last year. Isn't this fucking telling you something, mate? If you're gaining weight in cycle and not maintaining anything off the cycle, then something isn't right. You shouldn't be dropping everything you dropped, you gained, at the end of your cycle. You should be maintaining the vast majority of it. And if you're not, you're doing something wrong. Because otherwise, how will you progress? Yes, there is an element of 2 step forward and half a step back, but it's not 2 step forward and 1.5 steps back. That isn't how it works. If that's happening, you're too drug focused and you're not enough to training and diet orientated.
Yeah. I like that. Well, Dave, we got a call today here, man. We've got a few more questions to go, but we are about out of time. Plus, I know you're a busy guy over there trying to work your 23-hour days.
that's an exception, I must admit, but yeah, I've got one of them on Friday.
You are going to Amsterdam? Tomorrow
to see a couple, well, definitely see one client, potentially see another if he can get the time out to see me. Lake District on Thursday. To be fair though, that client on Thursday is also someone who I regard as a friend.
Well, if you go to a cafe and you they offer you a brownie, I'm just going to warn you now, don't eat it.
Oh, don't worry. I will not be doing it. Something, each to their own. I'm not casting judgment. It's something that I personally am very much not a fan of.
Right on. We should talk about that sometime. We discussed CBD, but we never discussed marijuana. That would be a good topic. I'm going to make note. We could talk about that one on the next show.
That's going to be, I am happy to talk about it. I really happy am, but it's one that's very close to home, seeing as I have a family member that it's pretty much destroyed their life.
Oh, wow. Okay. I made note then. We'll definitely cover that on the next show. Busy day today, it sounds like, though.
We had some work done on the house, and unfortunately, one of the workmen made a bit of a mess of it, so they're now coming to rectify it.
Oh.
But I've just realized I was supposed to clear the room for them, and I haven't done.
Okay. Well, in that case,
I have to go up now and apologize. They're on a back foot. Now I'm going to have to apologize to them for not getting the room ready for them.
All right, man. Well, thanks as always for coming back on. I look forward to recording this show with you, and I know that the listeners are looking forward to hearing you each week, too.
We do seem to be gathering quite a little following, don't we?
It's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm pleased.
Good.
Definitely. It's nice to know that these things, because I'm still very much of this attitude that this is just me rambling on about a load of bollocks. So it's nice to know that the bollocks actually mean something to certain people.
Yeah.
Regards the IFBB Pro, I'm more than happy if they want to drop me an email, which I'm sure you can put in the bits underneath. I'm more than happy to chat to them privately about what they're doing and give my 10 penneth on what I feel it could be beneficial for them.
All right. I didn't want to say her name, but yeah, she posted in the thread and yeah, so she's got you on social media. And if anybody does want to reach out to Dave, we also have the website and we now have the link to Under Construction there. So you can get a hold of Dave. You can get to his website. You can get to his YouTube channel there. It's all in the show notes for each program or at the website itself, advicesradio.com, under the drugs and stuff heading. And we post that stuff up on all our social media, so you guys can always reach out to Dave. Dave, let's get out of here, man, for another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. We will see you soon.
Take care now.
Advices Radio Network.